All right. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Robbie Ohmes, the discount store analyst at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. This is the Walmart presentation. Walmart has done, an incredible job over the last couple of years repositioning their merchandising approach and improving their store-level execution, which I think we may hear a little bit about today. You've seen that translate into pretty incredible results, especially recently in what's been a very, very difficult retailing environment, which is probably an understatement, as you all know. So I think we're really, really lucky to have Charles Holley from Walmart Stores with us today. I think a lot of you in this room are familiar with Charles. He's currently Walmart's EVP of Finance and Treasurer. He's also on Walmart's executive committee, and he's been with Walmart, I think, since 94?
94.
In several different roles, including the CFO of the International Division. Also with us today is Carol Schumacher, Vice President of IR. And with that, I'm very happy to turn it over to Charles.
Thank you, Robbie. It's a real pleasure to be here. Before we get started, I do have to do the normal forward-looking statement. I'm not going to read it for you, but I think you've all got one, and I'd ask you to read it and remind you that actual results could differ materially from any of the projections that are made today. I was here at this conference, Robbie, 2 years ago, and what a lot has changed since 2 years ago. Obviously, the economy is extremely tough. Our customer is being impacted all over the world by this economy. And I think our mission of saving people money, living better, resonates now more than it ever has. And it's our mission's more important now than it had ever been before. Currently, we're delivering on that message across the world now in almost 7,000 units. And that would include over 3,600 units in international, and the slide you're looking at is as of February 28th. We, as you know, did an analyst meeting in Mexico last month, and if you didn't get a chance to go on that, I would encourage you to go to some of these markets that we operate in. You'd be amazed at how well we serve those customers and deliver on our message of saving money. You would have seen that in Mexico with our bodega formats. Or our Superama formats, and you'd see the same thing in, under our store brands in Brazil like Toto Gia or Central America like Poli. And we're very encouraged about what we're doing in our businesses in these countries, and we think it's not just about using a Walmart banner or Sam's banner. In fact, we have over 50 store brands around the world. Looking at our last year's results transitioning into this year, just a couple of quick comments. You know, we went through a lot last year in all of the global economies that we operate in. Back in February of 2008, we put out our earnings guidance of $3.30 to $3.43. I think it speaks volumes about the stability of our underlying operations when we were able to come in at the end of the year at $3.35 within that range, and that's despite the legal charge that was about 6.5 cents. That's the first thing. The second thing I want to talk about is how we view the numbers. And we view our numbers and our performances on absolute terms, relative terms, and on trends. On absolute terms, it was okay. You know, we said, you know, it's not maybe our best performance when you go back in history, but it was just okay. But when you look at our relative performance, we've gone back and looked at 15 top U.S. competitors the last 5 years on sales and earnings per share increases, and we would have stacked up pretty good against those competitors. On average, we would have been our sales growth would have been a little more, and our earnings growth would have been a little more. When you look at this past year, though, I think of widening the gap. I think Warren Buffett uses a term called the competitive moat, and I think that we would have widened the competitive moat some. Our 6% increase in earnings per share would have been compared to about a negative 15% earnings per share on average for our competitors. And so we're widening the moat. We think that that's important. And the course trend, we have very strong momentum right now in our operations across the world. We have five operating metrics that we think are performance metrics, extremely important for our operations. And they're all about driving free cash flow, because we know that free cash flow drives the returns to shareholders. The first one, operating income growing faster than sales, we didn't do that. But as I just alluded to, on a relative basis, we feel very good about our performance and how we finished the year. Operating income growing faster than our property, plant, and equipment. We did meet that goal. It's the first time in many years that we've done that. And then payables growing faster than inventories. You can see that it's got a split rating. The negative, because if you just look at the balance sheet and do the math, we wouldn't have hit that. But when you strip out our construction payables, which are related to CapEx, and you strip out the negative cash balances, which we did not have this year and we had last year, and the reason we didn't have negative cash balances is because we were focused on having excess liquidity with the financial crisis at the end of the year. When you strip that out and you just look at the merchandising payables and inventories, our performance was positive, and we were able to hit that metric, and that's very important for us in our working capital. And then, of course, the inventories growing at half the rate of sales. Phenomenal performance. Our inventories actually decreased more than 1% on that sales increase of 7%. I think more importantly, when you look at the U.S. and you look at Sam's and Walmart, both of those operating segments had a decrease in their inventory. Not only that, the decrease in the inventory was on top of a relatively flat prior year. So just, I think, very, very good performance, and it set the company up very well financially and for our balance sheet. In fact, I would say our balance sheet is stronger today than it was last year. I'm not so sure there's many companies that can say that. Corporate expenses growing at slower than sales. You can see another split rating. When you pull out the legal charge we got in the fourth quarter for the settlement of the wage and hour, and you pull out our systems transformation expenses, we would have been up in our core overhead about 4.3%. And as we said in the past, we're fully intending to make sure that we hit that goal. And as you know, we've already had some restructure in the first quarter. And we feel good about the direction of the core overhead. We do know that the systems integrations, the systems that we have, I'm speaking of the HR systems that we've been working on, the financial systems and the merchandise systems, those will be headwinds for us for this year. Of course, it all goes into free cash flow, and I have to do the obligatory non-GAAP reconciliation for you. I'm not going to read it for you, but the attorneys wanted to make sure I showed that to you. So you've seen it, and you can refer to that when I'm talking about the $11.6 billion in free cash flow. And we do define free cash flow as operating cash flow less CapEx, more than doubled. We looked at the last week when a lot of the competitors were coming out with earnings. We looked at their free cash flows, and we took the top 10 that had released at that time, and it equaled between $7 and $8 billion in free cash flow. That's the top 10 combined versus our 11.6. Again, that's that competitive edge. That's widening that competitive moat, I think. Still maintain a very strong AA rating. And of course, what do we do with that free cash flow? Well, we invest in new stores, we do acquisitions, we do share repurchase, and of course, we do dividends. And our board of directors approved the increase of our dividend from 95 cents a share to $1.09 a share. That's a 15% increase over the prior year. We're very proud of our dividend record and our history with that. There are not many companies right now, I think, that have the confidence that we do with our cash flow and being able to increase their dividends, if they can increase it at all, especially at 15%. Kind of wrapping up on the transition from FY09 to fiscal 09 to fiscal 10, talk about that competitive moat. I think that's very important for us. It's put us in a very good position. Our operations and merchandising right now, the momentum they have is very strong. The consumer, our customer, our messaging to our customer is very strong. It resonates very well with our customer around the world, what we're doing about saving people money. Of course, a strong balance sheet and liquidity, I think, extremely important right now. And being opportunistic. Obviously, with this economy and what's going on in the markets, I do think there are going to be some opportunities over the next few months. I can't tell you what those are. Who knows? But it always produces opportunities, these kind of crises. And making sure that we're flexible financially, that we can capitalize on those opportunities, I think, is important. just like we did in Chile. You know, we just completed our tender offer in Chile, and that was a great opportunity for us. And I would hope and think that there will be some of those kind of opportunities in the future. Turn to international just for a second. You know, just because there's been a change, I got a question earlier today about the change in leadership at international, from Mike Duke going to CEO and Doug McMillan taking over international. What changes? And I had to think about it. Really, nothing's changed, and nothing will change. We have a very solid foundation in our strategy and in our business, especially in international. Very focused on growth and returns, making sure we strike the right balance between those two. Making sure that we're driving price leadership and EDLP across all of our formats around the world. We want to make sure that we're leveraging on a global basis. If you don't know, some of these merchandise systems have to do that we're doing in the U.S. deal with price optimization and space allocation. Those are being rolled out in many of the countries this year, so we will be leveraging those kinds of things across the different formats. The small soft discount format that you might have seen in Brazil last year at our Toto Dia, you'll see more of those kind of things in Latin America. I don't think it's an accident that Mike Duke put Vincent Trias, who was formerly our CEO in Brazil, to be the CEO in Asia, because Vincent has a lot of experience with multiple formats and sizes. And so we'll leverage more of that. And, of course, we want to make sure when we enter a market that we can win in that market. We can be a dominant player in that market. We don't want to just be flag planters. And that's very important, and we will continue to make sure we're focused on that. Just want to briefly touch on two countries. Japan. Talked to Doug about Japan. He wanted me to make sure that I worded it carefully. But we are optimistic, we're cautiously optimistic what we're seeing in Japan right now. As you know, Japan is struggling. The economy there is really having a hard time. However, I'll say our traffic is up. And our comps are positive right now and have been the last 3 or 4 months. And that's versus our competitors. Our strongest competitors, our largest competitors right now are negative. So we see very good signs. As a reminder, we went to everyday low price last year in a couple of categories in pets and the baby area. We saw what we thought were some very good results. We've now rolled that out into about 100 different categories. And it's still a work in process, but we're seeing positive results. We're very encouraged about what we see right now in Japan. And you can see that the price gap there is increasing between us and our competitors. And then briefly about the UK. UK finished very strong last year, and they continue that in the first quarter of this year. They continue to gain market share. You can see that's the TNS data that we refer to a lot. You can see they're outperforming the market. We believe their SG&A is lower than their major competitors, and that's allowing them to drive their everyday low pricing and their rollback programs, and their price gap is also widening, and that's why they're picking up the market share. A couple of comments I think are also important. As you know, that the hardlines business and the apparel business in the UK is very, very tough. Despite all that, we're seeing good, solid, positive comps in our George apparel and our hardlines business. We're very excited about that. The customer, I think the George, the fashion, and the value is resonating with our customer, and we're very pleased with that. Taking a look at the U.S., obviously we're very pleased with the comps that we recorded in February. You know, relative to the market, as we talked about how we look at it, obviously we distance ourselves quite a bit, continue to create the gap. Obviously, the gas prices, I'm sure, have helped us. We're getting a little tailwind from that. And it's, if you remember, I think around mid-February of last year, prices were as high as $3. And I think through February, you would have seen somewhere between $1.70 to $1.90. this year, so it definitely is helping our core customer. Kind of as a reminder, a couple of reminders about March that you need to remember. The first of which is, you know, we're not giving monthly guidance anymore. We are doing a 13th week guidance, and the reason we're doing that, we're finding it very difficult to forecast on a daily basis, weekly basis, and a monthly basis. We feel like we're much better at forecasting on a quarterly basis using that 13-week quarter. because even the months are very volatile. Having said that, also, March itself will be an unusual month. You had a little weather at the beginning, of course, but then you've got you've got an Easter flip. And the Easter flip is going to affect all our businesses a little different. And let me go into that a minute. First of all, if you look at international, most of international, this has to do with the quarterly results, most of international is on a December year end, all except Puerto Rico and Canada. So therefore, they will not have Easter in their first quarter results this year. Easter for most of international will actually be in the second quarter. For the U.S. businesses, Easter will be in the fourth quarter because they're on a January year end. Now let's go into the sales for the U.S. and the comps. Sam's is closed on Easter. So Sam's, although they'll get a build-up to Easter, they're going to have one full day. Last year they were closed. They're going to get that back this year. So they're going to get an extra day, basically, compared to last year. Walmart, on the other hand, will have probably a little bit more normal Easter flip. So just a couple of things to remember as you're looking at the March sales. Talking about Sam's, although the ticket was down slightly in February, we were very encouraged about our traffic for both our Advantage and our business member. It was up higher than it's been in quite a while. Also, I think it's important to remember the club sector itself, even though retail in general in the U.S. is still tough, the club sector is the fastest growing sector in the U.S. right now. It's a very good business to be in. Housewares picked up. That was a great sign for us. We haven't seen that in quite a while. And, of course, I'd mentioned the inventory performance. And we continue to see that, by the way. We saw that through the end of February. We still have good inventory performance in our Sam's Club. And obviously, one of the big announcements we had this week is we have a new CEO at Sam's coming in, Brian Cornell. Some of you may know Brian. He has an excellent reputation and excellent background in consumer product along with retail. And he'll be joining the Sam's team in the first week of April. We're very, very much looking forward to Brian joining the team. I think he'll be a great asset for the Sam's Club. Moving to Walmart, the U.S., we talked about the gasoline prices, but when you really get down to it, I think our pricing message is working. Our merchandising and our operations are very well aligned. Traffic now has increased for the past five sales periods, and the tickets increased over the past three periods. Very strong, I think, results. Price leadership is working. The customers not only need the EDLP, they really are starting to really rely on it at all levels. If you look at the consumers that you'd consider a little higher income, those maybe making over $65,000 versus those making under $65,000, you would see that we're gaining market share equally in both at the same rate. It's not split. I think everybody now is really focused on saving money. And then I think it's important, entertainment was equally as strong as we saw in grocery and the health and wellness categories. And it has been positive in the past, but it was very strong in February. And we sold, we had very strong comps in flat screen TVs, very strong comps in our laptop computers and in video games. And I think one of the real highlights for us, though, was really the home area, which has been a very tough area for everybody. And we were actually positive in our comps in home this past February. And when you compare that to our competitors, which we do on a relative basis, it was an outstanding performance. Apparel, still a little bit negative, but when we compare it to our competitors, we stack up very well, and we think we're on the right track. Why? What's going on in those areas? I think a lot of it has to do with the discipline the merchants are now having in those areas, the clarity of their assortment, the pricing, the signing they have in the store. It all seems to be coming together. And one last note on category seasonal also, I think, is doing very, very well, and we're very, very pleased with where in direction that it's going. What's going on and why is all this besides the gas prices? Well, financial concerns. As you know, we track every month our consumers, what's on top of their mind. And as you can see, this is kind of a record. If you take the top three concerns, it's over 80%. And those top three concerns would be money and finances be number one, weakening economy number two. And this third one is relatively new but not surprising. Unemployment and fear of job loss is number three. That was nowhere on the radar 5 months ago. in this survey, and all of a sudden it's cropped up and to be number three, and not surprising, like I said. So I think our message resonates even more, and price means even more than it ever has before. You know, we've increased the rollbacks. I believe we have over 40% more rollbacks than we had a year ago. We're not going to take the foot off the accelerator with our pricing. We will continue to be the price leader. I've been asked a lot about our gaps with our competitors. We're not going to take the our foot off the accelerator on the gaps. We're going to continue to have a good gap between us and our competitors, and we think that we're very well positioned to do that. We think it'll also continue to separate us from our competitors because we don't think this environment is going to go away anytime soon. Well, doing all this, it all really is just comes back to what Eduardo and his team have done in this last two-year period on their strategic framework, which is, you know, the save money, live better, the win, play, show on how we look at our merchandise assortment, and then the fast, friendly, and clean environments in our stores. And I'll just touch briefly on a couple of things on this slide. First of all, private label, private brands. We get asked a lot lately. There's been a lot written about what's going on with private brands. First of all, we are about brands. We think it's very important to have brands in the store, and they really set up the value equation for the consumer. Having said that, there are going to be categories and there are going to be certain SKUs where there just isn't a good value equation with the brand, and we will bring in private label. I think if you look at what we've done with Equate and the over-the-counter, it's been very successful and very appropriate what we've done there. As you know, we have announced that we've repackaged our food private label Great Value. You will be seeing that rolling out. It already has rolled out in some stores. You'll see more of that this month. You'll also hear more about that in the next couple of weeks when we roll out not just new packaging, but some of the new items we'll have in that category. I think there's a real opportunity there. Having said that, though, we're not going to be a store about private brands. We will be a store with brands, but we will have private brands in there also. Win, play, show. I think entertainment's a great example of win, play, show. It's an area we thought we could win, and I think we are. Whether it's, if you remember the remodels we did 2 years ago, opening it up, getting rid of the bullpens, having a great customer experience, looking at the space optimization we've done there, and just transforming the merchandise and the assortment itself, bringing the brands in there. The brands were very important there also. Done a great job of that. And finally, fast, friendly, clean. And talk about merchandise flow. Get asked, well, you've had such 2 years now, great performance in inventory at the Walmart stores. Can it continue? I don't know that we can have a decrease in inventory again. Maybe we can, maybe we can't. I will tell you this. We feel very good that we can achieve that goal that you saw, performance metric, of growing the inventory at less than half the rate of sales, which I think would be a great performance. But when you do that and you can get your inventory flow right, guess what else happens? It's a ripple effect. Your markdowns are less. Your shrink is less. So your margins go up. Your labor is usually less. And your associates are usually a lot more engaged and happier because they're not having to shuttle inventory and go look for inventory all the time. It's where they know it should be when they need it, and they can now take care of customers as they want to do. So it shows up across the board on the P&L and in associate engagement scores. So we think we still, and it also lends itself to a fast, friendly, clean store. We think we have more we can do there. And, of course, communicating the message of save money, live better. I think, as I said, the last 2 years, we've come a long way in aligning our marketing with our merchandise and operations. We have the highest ad awareness we've ever had at 81%, whether it's in this, you see the meals for under $10 or how much you can save in a year shopping at Walmart. I think it resonates now with all income levels. And finally, which I alluded to, is associate engagement. We've talked about that. We usually release this every October. It continues to increase, especially in the field and the field level. We're very proud of that. And a lot of it is what we're doing, I think, as a team, putting together our merchandise operations when we talk about inventory. That completes my formal presentation. And we'll go to Q&A, I think, Robbie. But I know, Robbie, you're going to probably ask me, or somebody will, about the Employee Free Choice Act. And so I might as well get that out of the way if I could. been a lot written about it. I know they introduced the bill this week. We call it the card check. And just a couple of comments. It's really not just about Walmart. It's really about all business in the United States, small and large. And it goes across all industries, even the financial services industry, healthcare, any service restaurant business, small and large, it could affect. And we're very opposed to the bill. You know, ultimately, it's really about a freedom of choice and the right to a secret ballot. We think an associate has a right to make an informed decision without being harassed, subject to harassment, or subject to any kind of intimidation. We think it's very anti-competitive, this kind of bill. I think if you had heard Warren Buffett earlier this week on CNBC, he pretty much alluded to the same thing. In the end, we're confident that Congress will get it right. They'll figure this thing out, and this bill will be defeated. But I thought I would go ahead and start with that because I figured you were going to ask me that question anyway, Robbie.
I was going to ask you that question. That was my first question. You took it away from me, and so therefore I'm going to ask you a question you probably don't want to talk about, which is monthly same-store sales. Looking beyond, and I love that you gave us so much detail on the March-April shift, looking beyond that as we anniversary last year's stimulus, which was a nice bump to your U.S. same-store sales, and since you are going to be only giving quarterly guidance when we get there, can you sort of help us think about how we should be thinking, you are thinking about monthly same-store sales when we get to the summer?
Sure, and that's a good question. First of all, just a reminder, the stimulus started somewhere toward the end of May, so you had a little bit of pickup in May, all through June, and then through the first couple of weeks, I believe, of July. So you had an effect through most of our quarter in some fashion or form. June, obviously, the strongest. And we think overall it was somewhere between 100 to 200 basis points in comp. It's hard to know exactly, but that's our best guess, somewhere between 100 to 200 basis points. And we will, when we come out with our comp guidance, which will be the third month of this quarter, and we'll give the 13-week comp guidance for the second quarter, we'll obviously be including what we are thinking in that. I will say this, we know we're up against that. We are working hard on plans to offset that. I'm not going to go into any details for obvious competitive reasons, but it is top of mind of Eduardo and his team, I know.
And just to follow up on that, this year's stimulus package, can you give us any insight as you all have looked at that, what impact you expect?
That's a good question. I'll be honest, it's very difficult. It's not like last year where you had you knew there was a direct impact. Basically, the government was mailing a check to everyone, and you knew there was cash in their pocket, and they were going to spend it. It's much different trying to understand this. Will there be some impact? Yes. How much? It's too early to know right now. And I think most of the economists are trying to figure the same thing out as we are. You hear that it's like I do, it's going to be much longer-term effect on the economy. Not as much of that stimulus is going to hit this year. But it's just too early to tell.
I just have two quick questions. One is, in terms of inventory going down, rising slower than sales, does that at all impact your in-stock position? Is there a limit as to how far you can go if there is an increase in out-of-stocks? And the second question is, regarding the money you're spending on IT, how long does that accelerate? And at the end of that expenditure, what advantages will you have that you don't have now?
Okay. If I forget the second question, you're going to have to remind me. I'll try to hit your first. What was your first one again? No, on the inventory, you obviously followed inventory a long time because anybody that's been around retail, or you followed retail, excuse me, a long time, anybody that's followed it knows that you can go ditch to ditch on inventory. And when you want to cut it off, you go out of stock. And when you turn it back on, you get too much. If you look at the last 2 years, Walmart and Sam's have done an outstanding job of reducing inventory and staying in stock. We didn't always do that. We have done that, and we feel very confident. We know the way we're structured has a lot to do with that. Eduardo has put in a structure where there's replenishment team that's specifically responsible for in-stock, and it has worked very well. And we our in-stocks are probably as good as they've ever been, yet our inventory is less, which is amazing. They've done a great job. So I think we can stay in stock, but it is a key. You have to watch that. And I really attribute it to the organization that Eduardo's put in. Your second question was?
Regarding the how long will the accelerated spending last?
Oh, on the IT?
And what are the advantages you're going to get when it's over?
The accelerated spending, it depends on, there's three main systems projects. The merchandise projects will be over sooner than later. That will be done toward the end of this year, completed. Those would be impacting in the margin and the inventory and those kind of areas. And those are planned, and we think we can capture those. So you see it in margin and less inventory and less need for debt and things like that, and interest. The second one is the financial systems. We've got another 2 to 3 years to go before that really gets full swing. So that will be a ramp up over this year and next year, and those will peak out. And then the and there will be some benefits. Some of it is just really local tax related, and just trying to do local tax planning and making sure that we can support our tax structures. It's very difficult under the old legacy systems. Another one is when we do acquisitions internationally, being able to plug and play is not so easy with the systems that we have. And we want to be able to do that. And so that will cut the cost of integration of acquisitions, I think, significantly. And then the other one is the HR systems. And we think on the compliance would be very important and reduction of any kind of fines and fees you might have on compliance with HR systems, but also in just how we manage and the tools that our HR managers will have will be much greater.
Charles, you briefly touched on Japan and the progress you've made on the EDLP and the comps being positive the last few months. But knowing that you also want to win in any country that you enter and stay in, and winning means profitability, could you talk about the results from an operating profitability side in Japan?
Yeah, we when you strip out the restructure charge that we had in Japan this last year when we closed some of the larger stores, you strip that out and you look at the underlying performance, it did have a profit, and we do expect to have a larger profit this year, but we're growing off a small base. So, you know, percentage-wise, it looks great, but we know it's taking incremental steps. But we do feel good about the direction that we're going. We've made a lot of progress in EDLC. I got asked that question earlier today. Are we there yet on true EDLC? I wouldn't say so, but we're getting there. We have a lot of work to do on supply chain still with EDLC. But we are encouraged from what we see in the direction we're going, both on the sales line and the expense line.
Could you talk a little bit more about where you might see private label going by category, sort of where the emphasis would be category by category, and how you might be approaching it strategically differently than in past go-rounds?
I don't think it's any different for any of the categories that we have right now. If you think about electronics, entertainment. With entertainment, we actually had to go and put brands in there before we could establish any kind of private label. We had used to have house brands, and we didn't have a lot of real brands. And we've gone in with brands, and it's made a big difference. But it's also educated our customer about the value of private label. When you go into apparel, bringing in like an Ocean Pacific like we've done, I think, is going to add. There'll be a lot of things like the LEI brand. I didn't mention that. LEI did fantastic, by the way. Even though apparel was negative, LEI was very positive. We feel very good about what we're doing there. So it just depends, but we know that no matter what it is, you need some brands there. You just can't play with all private label.
Just back here, I was just wondering, since you kind of revamped the electronics department or entertainment a couple years ago, I guess I was trying to get an idea if there's any way you could give us an idea on a percentage basis or how much it's increased your electronics business. And also, I know you guys had been testing kind of installation services within the entertainment sector. I was wondering if you're going to expand upon that at all.
I think on the last question, the story's still out. We're still testing it. So there's really not much to add right now since it's still a test. But as far as like the flat panel TVs, when you I can say I can't give you the hard numbers, but I can tell you that when you compare ourselves to our competitors, we're far, far out comping our competitors right now. And I think it has to do with price points, affordability. And then if you look at the notebooks, you're seeing notebooks now. They had a tremendous month in February, tremendous month. So we feel very, very positive about the direction that's going. Yes.
Hi. I know you said you didn't think card check would pass, but in the event that it were to, and that you did see some significant amount of unionization over the next 12 to 18 months, is it essentially a reset to your labor costs? Is it just a diminution of your profitability, or are there other elements, are there other factors that, you know, we should be thinking about?
Well, first of all, that's a hard question to answer, because you'd have to know which labor contract you're talking about, because they're all different. What I can tell you is this. We've gone in and we've looked at how does our compensation package, our pay rate, our benefits, things like that, how does it stack up with our competitors, both unionized and non-unionized? And I can tell you it stacks up very well, even with the unionized shops, from starting pay to the flexibility of our health care plans to the lifetime limits. We don't have lifetime limits on our medical insurance. A lot of these union plans do. So when we look at that and how it stacks up, you'd be surprised. We're very, very competitive, whether it's a union shop or it's a non-union shop.
Charles, can I get you to speak to sort of an outlook for food inflation or deflation as you move through this year, and sort of Walmart's participation in that?
Sure. We still see some inflation in some of the food categories, but the main deflation right now you're going to see is dairy, or disinflation. It just depends on the category of what you're talking about. We get a lot of questions about, you know, what happens with deflation. Have you started seeing it yet? What are you going to do with your pricing? And I can tell you this, you know, there is a delayed reaction. You may have a commodity that does drop in price yesterday. It doesn't mean today that the price is going to go down. It does have to work its way through the system. That's one thing to keep in mind. I see the same kind of economic forecast that you guys do, that they're calling for some deflation in some commodity categories here in the second quarter. Will that work their way through to our pricing? You would hope that there would be some. You know, we definitely work with vendors when the prices went up, and we would want to be working with vendors as the prices go down. And they know that. Our vendors are good partners, and they understand how that works. You know, there is some deflation, but right now, net-net, we haven't seen tremendous inflation, deflation, net-net across the whole store. You see it in pockets, the deflation, and mainly it's dairy would be the biggest one that we've seen so far. But doesn't mean that you won't see some of that as we get into the second quarter.
Why was Sam's Club unsuccessful in Canada?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think our competitor up there was very good, somewhat entrenched, and that was a tough start. And, you know, when you're going kind of greenfield like that, we've learned that before. It's very tough, and it was tough on Sam's Club. We could have battled it out, I'll be honest, and continued. You remember in Argentina and Brazil, we did the greenfields there, and those were very tough and very long years where we did not have success, but we finally are having success in those countries. But Sam's, we just made a decision that our patience with it was – and where we were and our capital efficiency, it was time to go ahead and close those stores. And we didn't have the member base at the end of the day, and we had a very entrenched competitor.
All right, I'm going to ask one real quick one under the wire here. China, you know, you had mentioned smaller store formats, and I think you opened, what was it, 19 stores in January.
That's correct.
Can you speak to the momentum in China right now and, you know, opportunities for store growth this year there?
Obviously, we're very excited about the long-term prospects in China, and we do feel like there'll be a lot of great growth in China for us, and both under the Trustmart label and under the Walmart label. Trustmart actually has smaller stores than the supercenters that you're used to. And then, again, as I may have mentioned earlier, it was no mistake that Mike Duke put Vincent Trias as the CEO of Asia. He has a lot of experience with multiple formats. And I think we're done.
All right, terrific. I want to thank Walmart and Charles for a terrific presentation.